Hello and welcome to episode 10 of Book Banter. I'm your host, Alex E. Talander, and in this episode we're going to be learning all about author Michael J. Sullivan, who has written and completed his six-book series, The Ryria Revelations. The first book, The Crown Conspiracy, came out last October, and they're being published in six-month intervals. So the second book just came out, called Avanpartha, and the third book is due out in October. We'll be starting off with my review of The Crown Conspiracy, followed by the interview I had with Michael J. Sullivan, and then we will have my review for Avanpartha, and that will conclude our episode of Book Banter for the day. But first, we begin with The Crown Conspiracy by Michael J. Sullivan. Released in October 2008, The Crown Conspiracy is the first in a six-book fantasy series known as the Ryria Revelations. Author Michael J. Sullivan includes all the tropes of a good fantasy story, leading one to think this is an ordinary, in some ways stereotypical, fantasy tale. The Crown Conspiracy is anything but stereotypical or predictable. Our main characters are nothing but low-life thieves, Royce Melbourne and Hadrian Blackwater, although they are very good at their jobs. The story begins with the introduction of these intrepid characters and their next heist to steal a particular item within the impenetrable confines of the king's castle. But as soon as they have their hands on the item, the trap is sprung, and they find themselves part of an elaborate plot. At their feet lies the lifeless body of the king. From here, the story kicks into high gear, taking the reader on a wild ride. In this world, it is important to know who your friends are and who are your enemies. It is also important to keep your enemies closest. As the story unfolds, we learn that while they may be common thieves, they are very smart people. They also realize that the idea of being a good person is starting to rub off on them, as they no longer do anything for a fast buck. By the end of the book, everything seems to have sorted itself out. Royce and Hadrian are now doing very well for themselves, as well as being close friends of the king. But clearly all is not as it should be, since this is the first book in the series. Fans will have to wait until April 2009 before they can get their hands on the next chapter in the Ryria Revelations, called Avanpartha. And now we have my interview with author Michael J. Sullivan. First off, thank you very much for doing the interview.
No problem.
And my first question is, when did you know you wanted to be a writer?
Oh, that was been quite a while ago, probably when I was around 13 or so that I started writing.
Who were your influences in becoming a writer? What made you want to be a writer?
Let's see. I started reading Tolkien, I think it was the first major book that I read and actually enjoyed. And I think I started with The Hobbit and then got into Lord of the Rings. And that was the first book that I really, kind of grabbed me. And when I got done reading that, I didn't really have anything else to read because that was back in the early 70s. Mm-hmm. There wasn't really a lot of novels of that type out anymore. Terry Brooks had yet to come out with his Sword of Shannon Honor novels. And I remember going to the bookstore and couldn't find anything. And I got kind of depressed because there was nothing else to read. So I actually ended up started writing just in order to kind of fill that void and write something that I wanted to enjoy, reading myself. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how I started doing it. And I ended up doing that for quite a few years. And then I started getting tired of the whole fantasy aspect. And I met my wife and she introduced me to some guy named Stephen King. And I started reading that type of novel, which was a little bit more contemporary, and I enjoyed writing along those lines for a while. I started even seeing him for many years, and then I just started to get actually serious about writing, because I had just been writing for friends and family and that kind of thing, for my own personal enjoyment, never intended to get published. And then at a certain point, I started to actually get serious on the matter, and when I did that, I actually, I started reading the classics. I started filling in all those gaps of my education I didn't get in school, learning, like, reading Shakespeare and Steinbeck and Hemingway and all this stuff. And not only did I read them, but I actually studied them. And I would actually write a novel a year based off of each person who I was studying. Wow. Like, I happened to really like Steinbeck, so I actually would write an entire novel based on that style. Then I'd read John Updike, and I'd write an entire novel based on his style, imitating it. And in doing that, I would figure out what it was that they were doing right or what I felt they were doing right, and I would kind of like take that. It's in a way it's like that television show Heroes where you have Siler who would go into each different person and steal their special
powers,
So I would go into each author and I'd find out what I thought was the most interesting thing about them and take it. Like from Steinbeck, I really thought his vivid descriptions were fantastic, so I tried to mimic those, and then The prose of Updike's I thought was just so lyrical, and I tried to steal that. And then Tolkien had a very strong plot, and I would, steal these. So then I tried to, rip off all these basic ideas and
stick them all together.
Basically, combining all of them, I tried making a style of my own. And I actually wrote a really good, what I thought would be a fantastic novel, and it was completely rejected out of hand. It just completely fell out, and the one person who I got to look at it said, "No, this is never going to sell. You might as well give up." And so I did. I stopped writing for 10 years, and I started an advertising agency. And from that, I ended up becoming quite successful. And then, because my daughter was having trouble reading, I ended up trying to get her involved in reading fantasy. Mm-hmm. And in doing that, I picked up a book called Harry Potter. And she read that, and I read it because I was just sitting there, and I was interested in reading it. So I read that, and I was for the first time in a long time. Yeah. But all the books that I had read up to that time were Pulitzer Prize winning, Nobel Prize winning mm-hmm. books that, quite frankly, can be a little dry. And like I said, I got my start off on Lord of the Rings. When I read Harry Potter, I was like, this is fun. This is just a blast. It's not hard to read. It's this great story that whisks you along. And I suddenly realized that, I had kind of forgotten that pure joy of reading. So when I started writing, I went back to that. I thought, I'm just going to write for fun. I'm not going to get it published. I'm just going to write something for the sheer enjoyment of it. And I started writing a series of fantasy novels based off of that. And that's kind of how I got to these books. But so I never really used all those tools, but they're there when I need
Right, as
them.
A foundation sort of thing.
And,
right.
and that's kind of how that all came about. Right.
And so where did you get the idea for Crown Conspiracy?
Well, funny thing was that I was actually watching television shows at that time. Babylon 5 mm-hmm. was something that intrigued me because that show was written and conceived all 5 seasons by the creator before the first one was ever shot.
Right.
And I don't know that had ever been done in a television series before. But it was really fascinating because he allowed characters to come and go, and you could see hints in the beginning of things that wouldn't develop for another 2 years in the story. And I thought that was really fantastic. I was really captivated by that, and I really liked that idea. For a television show, I thought, this is what they really ought to be doing. That this was the future of TV. I was seeing, this idea where you'd have these long story arcs, but within them you'd have smaller story arcs. You would have, of course, the episode story arc, which would just be for an hour, then you'd have a season-long story arc, and then you'd have the entire series-long mm-hmm. story arc, and they would, where one would end, the next one would pick up, and so on. And I thought, this is a great idea. But I thought, if I were going to do something like that, how would I go about doing it? And I came up with some ideas, and I thought, but what would be the topic? What subject would I choose? And then it occurred to me that there's never really been a successful medieval fantasy television show. So I thought, that would be something that would be kind of fun to try. So I thought of some ideas, and this is something I would do while, doing the dishes or, walking the dog. And I would just think of, how would I go about doing this? And so I actually came up with an idea, and I thought of these two thieves, and I thought about how they would have this problem and how you would, jump into the story and how they would have a little bit of dry wit, but they wouldn't be silly and they wouldn't be heroic,
Nothing stereotypical.
The kind of thing where you'd have, I am king. Yeah, nothing like I am Knight Johnson, I will defend you. Nothing that dramatic and nothing. They always seem to be really silly, like slapstick or stupid, like tongue-in-cheek, or they're very over-the-top, but neither one I wanted to see. I wanted to see something like the old, Errol mm-hmm. Flynn movies or an old Western that were believable, but, a little over the top. And so that's kind of what I was looking for when I thought this idea up. And then I thought to myself, well, how can I do this? It's a shame, I'm not a producer. I can't do anything. But I thought, I can write it. So I could actually write this story. And I thought instead of doing it in 6 seasons in a television series, I could do 6 mm-hmm. books, all of which would be self-contained little episodes, but would make one long story arc. And thought, well, I could try that. So this was just something I did for the sheer fun of it, because I thought it would be kind of cool. And that's a challenge. I want to see if I could do it. I want to see if I could do something as good as what I saw on television or better. And that's exactly how I started out. And that was the genesis of the whole idea.
And did you do any sort of research for the storyline?
Well, in most of the writings I did that were contemporary or historical, I do a lot of research. But this was fantasy, and I particularly chose fantasy for the specific reason that I didn't want to have to put a lot of effort mm-hmm. in researching it. But as it turns out, because there's something called the Internet, it makes it a lot easier. I mean, I used to have to go to the library and study and things, and they're very far away, and it was a real pain. But now, this is the first time I ever tried writing a book when now the Internet exists. And I'm like, my God, this is so easy. Anytime I'm curious about something, I just pop it up, and there's an answer. Like, wow. So I actually became rather interested in researching things like, weapons and techniques and political systems that I actually used for background. I also read history a lot. Every day I read textbooks on history just for the sheer fun of it. And I had actually been reading, you know, Western medieval type literature from like Charlemagne on through to the Discovery of the New World. And there's a lot of interesting things in there that you don't really notice about too much, like the way Charlemagne would have people, little agents to go around to find out if kings were doing what he wanted them to do. And it's just little things you don't really notice about so much in history that I thought, oh, that's kind of an interesting thing. I could probably use that. And so I did do more research than I ever anticipated doing it, because, I mean, the whole idea was that this is a made-up world anyway, so no one can come behind me and say, well, this is wrong. So that was not really something I had to be overly concerned about. But it made it easier. The more research I knew, the more ideas I got.
Yeah. And what about your main characters, Royce and Hadrian? Did they come from anywhere specific, or you just worked on making them up?
No, those just popped out of my head, but I'm sure there are certain similarities to characters that I've liked in different media, like Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid, or the old television series I Spy with Robert Culp and Bill Cosby. Those are very similar, you know, and I didn't even realize it until I happened to go back and see some of these things. Oh, you know, that kind of reminds me of my characters. And I'm like, it was completely subconscious. I had no idea. But yeah, now looking back, well, yeah, they are kind of like that. So, I mean, they must have popped out of there somewhere. But no, I was just trying to think. I mean, the first thing I came up with was the idea of, you know, okay, you have these two thieves, and then they go to try and steal something and end up find themselves being framed for murder. I thought, well, that's a good way to get the person, you know, junked right into the story. So that's all that it came out being, was that was just a great way to start the story off. And then from there, everything else developed.
And so your choice in making them thieves, was that just part of the story, or is that always a plan to have with these hero characters?
Yeah, I'm not really sure if that was anything specific about that, other than the fact that I just thought it made a good story start, was just the idea that, you know, how do you get some interesting characters who aren't princes or kings, who have some sort of ability, you know?
You've got some, like, yeah, interesting words like Rhyria, Avanpartha, Nifron. I mean, where did these words come from? Did you just make them up, or is there a sort of genesis to them?
Well, strangely enough, for the most part, when I write and I come across the word that I need that is going to be made up, I generally just throw in a placeholder. Mm-hmm. You know, just first thing that pops in my head, I just write it out and I just keep going, because I don't want to interrupt my thought process. And then I always plan that I'll come back and I'll put some thought into that. And usually what happens is I'll come back and go, well, you know, that's okay. I'm just going to leave it at that, because it looks good. With the particular word Rhyria, which is the one you're bringing up at the moment, means two in Elvish. That was one that I actually spent a lot of time working on to try and get it to sound right and look right, because I know that a lot of people, like my daughter, for instance, she doesn't actually pronounce the words as she reads them. She just, like, recognizes them optically when she sees them. So I wanted it to have a sort of a certain look to it, as well as a common means of pronouncing it. So I actually wrote that out in several different ways and had different people tell me how to pronounce it. And I run it through the different computer programs that actually would speak, so I could hear how it would pronounce it. So that's actually one of the few words I put some effort into. But no, most of them are just off the top of my head that I thought, oh, that sounds pretty close to what I'm looking for. But I didn't. There are a few words in the course of the story that are specifically chosen for a very specific reason. But those are tied into the plot, which are very important. But for the most part, I just jotted down the first thing that popped in my head, and then if I liked it, great. If I didn't, I had to go back and figure out how I can improve on it.
And the storyline for the second book, Avanpartha, where did that come from?
Well, that was almost like considered the filler episode, if you were considering, because you have the mainline episode that drives the plot. And then that was going to be the kind of one where you get to know more about the characters as they go off to do something that really isn't pertinent so much. So that kind of got to be them in a sleepy village with a, you know, almost a Beowulf style of problem. There's a nightly attack. So that was kind of where that was coming from. But as it turned out, as I wrote it, more of the mainline kept coming into it, till now it is got enough elements in it that it's no longer that filler episode I was anticipating. But it does. The first book lightly glosses over the main characters and gets you right into the action. And that was very much by design. I didn't want to spend a lot of time explaining the world or the people in it. I want you to get into the story, have fun, and by the end of it, you'll know who the characters are. You'll have a good idea of the world and how it works. And then in the second book, that's when you start getting much more information, which I didn't want to bore you with in the first one, but by the second book, these are things you're probably going to want to know. And I always figured that once the reader wants to know these things, they're going to be much more happy to get that information as opposed to being, you know, bored to death by it. So in the second book, it tends to flesh out more. And that, like I said, that was how that book kind of came about, was it was supposed to be a slightly slower paced book so you get to know more of the background of the world and about the characters.
Okay, and so the whole six book series is complete, right?
That's correct. Yeah, I ended up, like I said, I was writing it as one big story, as if it were episodes of a television show. So I wrote the whole thing, and as I'm writing each series, I had put it on the internet for a while, and people would just download it and read it, and they started giving me some feedback to it, and they really liked it. So I got to the third book, and people were saying, this is really great. And my daughter, who I finally gave the book to read, she says, well, I can't read it in manuscript form because it just drives her crazy. She goes, if you want me to read it, you actually have to get it published. I said, oh, okay. So that's when I actually said, well, what the heck, I'll give it a try. And it was actually my wife who managed to get me an agent and finally managed to land a contract with AMI for the first book. And that book was published right as I was working on the last book. So before it went to press, the last book was completely finished, which was really important because I wanted to make sure that, you know, everything was done and it all worked out. And if I had to go back and check on the internal integrity of the rest of the story, I could do that without having to worry about one book being on the shelves and not being able to be touched. And so that was very, very, I was very happy with that. If I had gotten published earlier, it probably would have been a problem because this allowed me to have a lot more time and to really perfect the story correctly. So I know, you know, it's going to work out and I don't have to have any added pressure of wondering, you know, how am I going to end this? You know, I know it works out and I know it works out really well. So
and it probably makes it easier with the deadlines then too.
Oh, yeah. Now it's just a matter of I just got to publish, you know, polish and edit each book to make sure that it, you know, looks as nice as it should be.
And the third book, Nifron Rising, when's that due out?
That will be out, unless I'm hit by a truck or something, that'll be out in October 1st. Each one of these books, surprisingly enough, when I go back and work on them, they should be done. I've already written them and I've edited them several times. But when I go back and look at them again, I realize, no, this
something.
can improve. And you can do that for a very long time. Yeah, and sometimes I've actually been tightening the plot up in the story, realizing, why did I write it that way? And I don't have to. And specifically when you go away from it for a long time and then come back, you start seeing things. And so it really does take a lot more work than it seems. I mean, I really will work on this for 6 months before I get it just precisely the best I can to get it out the door. So, yeah, it will be out hopefully October 1st, and hopefully everyone will be pleased with that
one. And then are they coming out pretty much in six-month intervals, I think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of my plan. Since I've got them all done, it shouldn't be too much more difficult than to do that. So, yeah, hopefully every 6 months. And I'm not sure if that's good or bad based off the fact that, it's a good idea that I think it keeps the momentum going. It certainly makes readers happy. They don't have to wait 2 or 3 years in between books. But on the other hand, I don't know that the first one has really settled in enough for enough people to have read it. I mean, people are still just now discovering the first book, which has really only been out, I think, 7-8 months. And so here I'm coming out with the third book this coming October, and the first book has really not been seen by that many people. So I'm wondering if I'm rushing it too much where I'm not getting enough of people reading that first book. But then again, on the other hand, I've been told mostly by publishers that if you have a series, that a lot of people will purposely not read any of them until the entire series is out. Yeah, and that's a real problem because, you know, if enough people don't read them as they come out, then there won't be enough reason to continue writing them. You know, if I'm not producing an income or getting a following, then publisher's not really going to want to invest any further in this. So I hope that that's not the case, that people aren't all going to wait to that last book. But I mean, I can certainly understand that. I mean, I'm one of those people who you know, would want to wait till all the Buffy series came out before I went to the store and rented the whole thing.
But I think people will also be happy because you've got, instead of just one book, you've got a couple of books out, so that way they can pick up two or three now and read those.
Yeah, that seems to be the case, that a lot of people who do come to signings, they will pick up both books at the same time, which I was telling them, it's kind of strange. Something, you know, you haven't even read the first one, to find out if that's any good, you're going to pick up both. And say, oh, yeah, we think it's going to be good. So that's always nice. And,
so now that you've got all the whole series set, do you plan on writing more in the same world at all?
Well, that's probably all going to depend on how well received these are. Like I said, I actually wrote, I think now 19 novels, but these are the first that have been published. So, and many of the previous books are have merit. They're very, you know, very, very interesting, and they would have to be reworked a little bit. I've improved as a writer, so I would want to rework it. But they have some really good ideas, and they're not necessarily, some are in fantasy, but most of them aren't. Most of them are contemporary. There's some horror, there's some science fiction, there's some, you know, just general what if novels that are, that I would probably want to explore and bring those out as well. But like I said, if these came out and were just very well received, I could see myself eventually going back to them, because there is, when you get done with the series, you'll realize that the there is a lot of prelude to this series. There's a lot of information to do with Navron, and then Ezra Hodden and his story, and then of course there's post what happens to these books, which again, when you get to the end, you'll realize that there could be sequels that add on to it. And I actually did leave one little like plug open that if I ever wanted to write a continuing saga here, there is one little aspect that most people will never notice when they read it, but I could use that to give a precedence for writing another series based off of it. So I could do that, but it's all going to depend on whether these are received well or not. But I don't want to be locked into doing the exact same thing forever. I think you actually had an interview with Brandon Sanderson not too long ago where he was saying something very much along the same lines. And I have to agree with him that it's like, you know, being stereotyped into a certain cast where you don't want to be playing that same character all the time. You don't want to be writing the same books all the time. You want to be writing, you know, a variety of things because that's what makes it interesting. So you don't want to be saying the same
another interview
thing
I did with Dan Simmons, he's very much that sort of author where he hates being categorized into any sort of genre and just kind of likes to run the whole gamut.
Yeah. Like I said, I the next book I'd probably come out with would actually be a contemporary fiction novel, which would have some fantasy elements to it, but it would have nothing to do with, you know, knights or kings or wizards or anything like that. It'd be a modern day, and the style would actually be a little different. Actually, one of the best book I thought I had written prior to these is not fantasy at all. It's a very serious, very prose heavy type of novel, which I have had people read that and they look at it and they said, you know, did you write this? Because this is nothing like your other work. And I'm like, yeah, well, you know, I can write in different styles. It's not like I just stick with one style. So, and I don't know that a lot of writers do that, so I'm not sure how well
and,
that would be.
So are you working on a new book now as well, or is it mainly just working on stuff you've already done?
Oh, no, right now, I mean, my daughter is insistent that I actually start a new book because she's more interested in the new books that I've described to her than these that are coming out now. But as it happens, with the six-month deadline per book, I'm pretty much kept completely focused on that. I don't really have much time for anything else because I've got the book promotions, I've got some online promotions, and then, of course, I have to get these books out every 6 months, which means I've got to get them done early so that other people can review them and edit them in process. So that whole process takes quite some time.
Oh, wow.
And I also do the covers for them, so I also do the artwork on top of it. So I tend to get backed up.
And do you have a set writing schedule you keep to every day?
You know, there's an interesting website, and it talks about famous writers and their writing process, when they write, and what their average day is like. And I know you.
Yeah,
you
I like to hear one of the people
I've
say.
Actually listened to your podcast, so I can call you on some of these things. I know what's coming. Although I didn't prep for this, which I probably should have. But I've noticed that a lot of the people who write all seem to have very similar, patterns of how they go about writing, which I found strange because I just did it and didn't realize I was doing something that everyone else did. But I tend to write in the morning. I tend to write early in the morning, and I don't write the full day. And I write from, like, say, 8 o'clock in the morning, and then around sometime after, say, noon or 1, I'll stop for the day and I'll do something else. And in the evenings, I tend to read. So, but I've noticed that tends to be a consistent pattern among writers, that most writers do write in the morning, and then they write half a day, and then that's all they do with sitting down. But that, as you've been told by, I'm sure, everyone else, you continue to write. You just don't type. You don't write out by hand. You think about things. You run stories. I mean, because my favorite time of writing is if I'm out you know, going for a bike ride or walking or something, then that's when I will churn scenes over in my head, and you don't have to worry about backspacing. You know, you just, it just runs it again until finally it seems right. And then when you sit down,
right,
you know, it's all right there and you can just start writing. But yeah, I always thought I was being really lazy because I didn't write, you know, 8 hours. And, but apparently no one does. So I don't know.
And, do you have any advice for writers looking to get published?
Well, like I said, my own personal experience has been that when I was trying to get published, when I was working very hard, when I was studying writing, when I was, you know, writing consistently every day, writing things purposely to, you know, mm-hmm. enlarge my understanding of writing by writing things that I wouldn't even dream of reading, much less wanting to write. I eventually got to a point where I kind of like didn't like writing or reading. And eventually I just dropped all that. And it wasn't until I gave up trying to write to get published and I just wrote for my own pleasure that I actually wrote something that people really enjoyed. And I have a feeling that mm-hmm. that is somewhat of a key to writing, that when you write for yourself rather than for an audience or to get sold, that what you write, generally, if it's pleasing you, if you would enjoy going back and reading your own stuff just for the fun of it, that's the kind of thing mm-hmm. that's going to appeal to a larger audience. And that's the kind of thing that people will react to better and hopefully also publishers.
So do you have any hobbies? What do you like to do in your spare time? You mentioned that you like walking the dog and bike rides. Do you have anything else?
Well, I don't like driving in the traffic. I live in the D.C. area, and the traffic here is horrendous. So I generally avoid driving, and as a result of that, I walk or I ride my bike. So I do that just as a means of getting some exercise. But I, you know, I've played tennis. I've gone, you know, hiking and bicycling is mostly what I generally do for the most part nowadays. But I can't think of too much else I have time for recently. I mean, of course, reading, but that's kind of a given, isn't it?
And speaking of reading, so you said you liked reading historical textbooks. Anything else, or is that mainly it?
Well, actually, let's see. I said I started out reading almost exclusively fantasy. That was the only thing that interested me when I was young. And then, like I said, I got very interested into Stephen King's works. That was back the time when he was coming out with The Stand and The Shining, which I thought were just fantastic. And I got very interested in that type of writing. And then I moved into, you know, science fiction with Asimov and Dune and those kind of works. And then I started actually getting into the more of the, you know, the classics of like Steinbeck and such. But like since that time, I had a period where I didn't read for quite a while because I had totally given up on my dream of writing. But then, like I said, Rowling's Potter actually got me back into enjoying reading again. So I've looked for books that have been fun. And actually, the books that I've found to be the most enjoyable recently have been in the YA area. Books along the lines Bartimaeus trilogy and things of that. They're more interesting and more creative. And they seem to be out of the ordinary more so than what appears to be being placed in the more of the adult region. I read a rather a large assortment. I mean, another one I happened to like was A Thousand Splendid Suns, which I happened to pick up, which was very beautifully written. And I've read, you know, nonfiction and fiction at the same time. I also thought that Killers of the Earth was by Ken Follett, actually, because people would come up to me and they say, "Oh, is this like Ken Follett's Killers of the Earth?" And I'm like, I have no idea. It's like I've got to read this guy. And then, of course, I was told by many people, they said, "You know, your book reminds me of that Mistborn by Sanders." And I'm like, okay, maybe I should read him. And so I end up getting a lot of suggestions on who I should read, mostly by people coming up to me or by reviewing my books. It's like, you know, this book reminds me of this person. And, you know, now I'm reading George R.R. Martin, because a number of people have said that's something that, you know, they've either enjoyed or they've compared my book to. So I'm working through those. So I'm kind of catching up now on the fantasy, because I haven't read fantasy in a long time. And so I'm kind of trying to catch up on all the things that I kind of missed out on.
And so for my last question, which you probably know it's coming since you already know the questions, is do you have a favorite TV show?
Well, I used to watch a lot of television. Then I slacked mm-hmm. off of it. And then I got a thing called a DVR, which allows you to record things and get back to them later, which has been wonderful. And then after a while, it turned out that I just, you know, I would record things and I never get around to watching them because I got more and more interested in writing and reading. So it's like I haven't had much time. But the last shows I really did enjoy was Babylon 5 and Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And Heroes was for the first few years that really captivated me, and Pushing Up Daisies, which I thought was a beautifully written show. But no, not right. At the present time, I actually have no shows that I watch on a regular basis.
And that was my interview with author Michael J. Sullivan. And now we move on to my review of Avanpartha by Michael J. Sullivan. Our intrepid duo return in the second installment of the Rhyrea Revelations to solve another mystery and fight another day, before Royce and Hadrian barely have time to settle after the fun had in the Crown Conspiracy. They find themselves pulled into a new problem. A young woman needs their help as her village is being attacked by an unknown nocturnal creature. The town of Dahlgren is an idyllic place, except now it is visited each night by an ancient monster looking to terrorize and kill everyone. Royce and Hadrian know they can't take on this beast by themselves, at least not without some impressive magic, and call on the help of their old friend and brilliant wizard, Ezra Haddon. Hadrian does his best to protect the town and its people, fortifying it and having everyone hide out in the fortress each night. Meanwhile, Royce and Ezra Haddon journey to the ancient elven tower known as Avanpartha. There they hope to confront the beast and kill it. But everything doesn't go according to plan, as it never does, and Hadrian learns some very important things about himself. Like the Crown Conspiracy, Avanpartha is a perfect standalone book. As well as being a sequel, it can be read either way. Sullivan ramps up the action and story as we learn more about the characters we've come to like, as well as about the incredible world he has created. At the same time, more details are revealed about the growing overall story, leaving readers waiting in earnest for the next installment.
You don't have to be loony about books just to love reading. Bookloons is your corner bookstore in the Global Village, with columns and reviews in genres including classics, contemporary, fantasy, mystery, nonfiction, romance, science fiction, travel, and tales for teens and young readers. Bookloons updates every 10 days and currently has almost 11,000 reviews. To find out more, go to bookloons.com.
And that concludes this episode of Book Banter. If you would like to send me any questions or comments, you can email me at alexctalander@gmail.com. There is also the Book Banter mailing list where you can get all your news and updates on Book Banter. Just send an email to bookbanterpodcast@gmail.com. And for anyone who's on Twitter, you can find Book Banter there too. Please join me next time on July 1st for episode 11, where I will be interviewing award-winning author Robert J. Sawyer, whose latest book is the first in a trilogy called Wake. But for now, thank you for listening, and see you next time.